The following podcast is from the weekly message at Summit Church in Upstate South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
Summit Church, get the opportunity to stop by here every few weeks or so. My last couple of times through the rotation that I was supposed to be in Spartanburg, I actually was in Spartanburg, but I wasn't here in Spartanburg. I was right down the road at Bethany Church, worshiping with them, doing a little teaching there, as we've been having some ongoing conversations about the possibility of our two congregations coming together. And I know Kyle's been keeping you up to speed, along with Shane and others, in regards to how that process has been going. It's been encouraging. I'm excited over the next couple of weeks. I think Shane and I and Kyle will be in all the life groups here of Summit Spartanburg with the chance to talk with you a little bit about what we've discovered. This conversation has been going on since May, but we can tell you what we've found out, especially over the last 6 or 7 weeks. We've been spending more time there at Bethany. And then there's also answering any questions that you might have as we continue on through this process. December the 2nd, we're going to be having a joint worship service together there, Bethany. We're looking forward to that, lunch afterwards. And then we'll give the month of December to continue to answer any questions that you may have as elders continue to pray and process things. And we'll see what the Lord does. We'll reconvene come January and see exactly what the Lord has for us. But we're excited about the process so far. It's been really good. It's been incredibly encouraging. We look forward to sharing that with you in life group setting, and then answer any questions that you may have as well. If you're not in a life group and you go, well, I still got some questions, you can ask us those. We'd be more than happy to answer them best we know. And so feel free to email myself, Shane, Kyle Caton. All of our emails are summitupstate.org. We don't have a lot of secretaries that you have to get through to get in touch with us. So just email us and we will respond to you. It is great to be with you. I'm a little on edge, and I need to tell you why. I hate technology. And this has nothing to do with my message, in case you guys are wondering. Technology is currently beating me. And I had to get a new cell phone recently. I had to get a new number. And I had the same number for 20 years. And there's pros and cons to getting a brand new number, especially when you don't give that number to everyone who's had your number over the last 20 years. That's been really kind of nice. Someone, I don't know if you know that people are doing this, you need to know, because this might be you. They can take, like, your cell phone number now, and they can rip it off, and then they can use that number as a front to call people. So, like, my cell phone number would pop up, not my name, just like this number, my number, my old number would pop up on someone's phone, and then they would answer that, and then they would get my voicemail, but then they would also get a message from somebody else that's not me. And from what I can gather, after a pretty long period of time, evidently my phone was being used to promise to sell cruises to elderly people. And so what that meant for me is that on a regular basis, I would get phone calls from people screaming at me, my voicemail, because I don't answer the phone if I don't recognize the number, so same thing. And then the voicemail would be somebody screaming at me, if you don't stop calling me and trying to sell me a cruise, then I'm going to call my lawyer and you're going to get in trouble. And then there were some other really nice elderly people who wanted more information about the cruise. I couldn't take it anymore. Like, this is one really sweet lady, and I remember it was on a Wednesday night, and I was waiting for a meeting, so I had a little time. So I just called her. I never did it with anybody else. I just called the sweet lady back. I said, hi, this is Jason Malone. You got a phone call from my number about a cruise? Yes, could you tell me more about that? Well, I'm not selling cruises. As a matter of fact, I'm a pastor in town. Really? And then we had a nice little conversation. So I had to go in and get a new phone. Now, you know how it works. You're up for your free upgrade. That is $1,000. And so, because I have this conversation with my wife sometimes. Babe, it's like free upgrade. No, that's not how it works. Like, that, you go in, think, and then you got to spend all the money. And so I had to go in, and I had to do the whole phone thing. And it was just, but then there was some kind of deal going on, which means I had to take this phone. My wife couldn't even get her phone to turn on anymore. It was really, really dead. And then they had to mail her a phone to her house, and then I was supposed to mail that phone back. And that's how I'm going to get a rebate on this. And at the end of the day, I know they're taking me for $17,000. I know that's what's happening. And there's nothing I can do to stop it. I'm not smart. Like, I usually have to take Kyle Estep with me wherever I go. Kyle, are they ripping me off right now? That's what I would ask him. That's how I know. I don't know how to do anything. And then, on top of that, all this has happened in the last couple of months, and it's the reason that I'm on edge. It's not because I've had 5 cups of coffee this morning. Although I have had 5 cups of coffee. I decided to switch over from a satellite company, from a televisions, from a satellite, I'm not naming names, from a satellite company, there's a few, to a local cable company, there's one. And they came over to switch things out for me. Did I tell you this? They came over to switch things out for me, and this guy, they switched it out. Everything was working really, really great. And then after a few days, some of my channels weren't coming in that were supposed to be coming in, and especially like the football channels, which I need. And so I called them, and so they sent somebody out. And when the guy came out, he said, well, what we need to do here is we need to take your television off the wall, to which I said, I don't think we do, because see, whoop, it pulls out just like this, and you can get to the things that you need to get to at the back of the TV. He goes, no, we need to take this down now. And he just starts taking my TV off the wall. And he didn't look like a super strong fellow, and so I thought I would help him take my television off the wall. And so we took the TV off the wall, and after about a couple of hours, he fixed what needed to be fixed. And when it was time to turn the TV back on, you know, we hit the power button, and then there's no picture. Yeah. And I'm kind of looking at it, and he's kind of looking at it, and then he walks right up in front of the TV, and he said, huh, I cracked your TV. And when we taken the TV off the wall that he thought we needed to take off the wall that I didn't think we needed to take off the wall, he cracked my television. And he goes, isn't that something? Like, I've never done that in all my years working for this company. I go, well, this is really great, because I'm glad I could be that guy. I'm glad I could be the guy. Because you already know I'm a pastor, and now I got some decisions to make on how I'm going to treat you in this moment. And so the whole process starts then, right? Because then another guy's got to come, and he's got to take a picture before you can even get a new television. Now, don't feel bad about the TV thing, because that's just first world problems, right? Because there's other TVs in the house, right? This is, oh, you weren't able to watch television? No, there's other televisions. Just go watch another. That's what I tell my kids. Dad, we don't have a TV. No, we have multiple televisions in this house. Just go watch another one, right? But I have to go through the whole process, and that process, I went to a local place called Best Buy. I will name them, because they've just been great. And I got my television. I got a new television, and I went, and I hooked it up. Put everything back on the wall, got it turned on, put it up on a Wednesday afternoon. My kids came in, they go, oh, Dad, you got a new TV, because I didn't know how long the process was going to take. Oh, you got the TV, this is really great. And it worked great on Thursday, and it worked great on Friday, and then Saturday I was watching the Florida-Georgia game, this was a couple weeks ago, TV just goes out. It's a smart TV. It's winning. So I did what we have to do. We have to take it back off the wall again, and then we got to take it back into the place, and then we got to get another television, then we got to take it in there, and this is the whole thing. This is the reason I'm telling you this entire time. I'm a little anxious, I'm a little aggravated, and I'm a little agitated with life. And you don't know me that well. I'm just going to let you know technology is one of the things that just kind of sets me off. Kyle, what do you have? What's the thing out there that you go, this is, let me let, Bethany, what's his thing? What's the thing? Like, I've got a couple. One's technology. My wife just knows. Really not just technology. Like, I've told you guys, fixing anything around the house. Like, I just don't know how to do it. And my wife knows. Like, if there's something to be done around the house, like, she doesn't ask me on a Saturday anymore because I have to teach the Bible on a Sunday. And it is not good to ask me on a Saturday because I'm not in a good place, right? So if I'm going to do any home improvements, it's on Monday or Tuesday. And by doing home improvements, I mean I invite Kylie to step over and he does it for me. Anyway, hand him the stuff. Well, what's his thing? What's Kyle Caton's thing? Just really gets under his skin. Oh, rainbow nightlights. Sounds like there's an inside story there. Mm-hmm. A lot of people laugh, though, so it's been shared from the stage, maybe? Oh, last Sunday. I'll give it a listen. I can't wait. Also, yeah, driving. Yeah. Traffic jams. Yeah. We're at the point now in my marriage where we're going into traffic, and my sweet wife, we've been married 18 years, she just knows now. She just reaches over and just, like, pats my leg. It's going to be okay. Your children are in the car. Remember, this is what they'll remember about you when they're out of the house. He was a sweet man, but he screamed in traffic, yeah. I'm excited to teach today. Here's the reason I'm excited. If you have your Bibles, you can open them up. We're in Hosea. We've been studying through Hosea. And I'm really excited today because I have a passage from Hosea that has been a huge encouragement to my heart and my mind this week, and I'm really excited to share it with you. Sometimes as a pastor, when you're preparing to teach, there are some Sundays where you feel this weight, not a bad weight, I think it's a healthy weight, to explain something. Like, there's something in this text that I feel like I really need to be able to explain well to people. And then there are other Sundays when you're working through a text and you go, you know what, this text really is just, I get the chance to remind people of something. And this is one of those texts today in Hosea 11. I think I get the opportunity for so many of you in the room not to say something that you've never heard before or to explain something that's very difficult to understand per se. I just get the opportunity to remind you of something that is very true. And I hope and pray that it is encouragement to you. It's been an encouragement to me. There's been some running jokes around our table. We get together as pastors and study passages together every week or so. And you know, Hosea's got some really hard, sad, difficult passages to process through. Kyle Caton's had a lot of those. I've had a ton of those where I've been teaching just kind of how the rotation has fallen and whatnot. And so I'm really excited today to have a passage that, I don't know, as I've processed and thought through it, it's been incredibly encouraging to me because I get to talk with you today about the compassion of God. And I love that. Now, I'm not sure what you think about when you think about God. Unless you and I have personally had that conversation, I'm not sure what pops into your mind when someone talks about God or when you think about God. But I can promise you this, it very much varies even in this room. Lots of people think different things. And I'm not even necessarily talking about good things versus bad things. I'm talking about different things. It was A.W. Tozer, a pretty well-known pastor, that once said, "What comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us." But it was also C.S. Lewis who said, "I read in a periodical the other day that the fundamental thing is how we think of God. By God himself, it is not. How God thinks of us is not only more important, but infinitely more important." Now, what you may ask is, Jason, what do you think about those quotes? And what I would say is yes. Yeah. Also, side note, interesting that back in the day, everybody just went by their initials and then their last name. So henceforth, I'd like to be known as J.A. Malone. Put it on the business card, Kate, and we can do that, right? I think one very much informs the other in regards to those quotes. C.S. Lewis went on to say in that same quote that I was quoting just a moment ago, "How we think of him is of no importance except insofar as it is related to how he thinks of us." How God thinks of you and me and others has huge implications on how we should process and think of him. And there are so many things that I love about Scripture. I know the same is true for you. But at the top of my list is this. I don't have to guess how the God of the universe thinks and feels towards me. And neither do you. Isn't that incredibly good news? And what's so amazing to me is even in the midst of our, and there as you study through the book of Hosea, their unfaithfulness to God, in the midst of their, as we've been studying through, spiritual adultery, in the midst of their constant idol worship, in the midst of all of that, God still proclaimed how he felt towards the children of Israel. Again, Hosea 11, if you have your Bibles with you or maybe on your mobile device, if you're new with us, newer with us here, we love teaching through books of the Bible. It's usually what we're doing. This is a 9-week study on Hosea. We just have a few weeks left. What we've been able to do is actually walk pretty much chapter by chapter up until last week. And then last week, we kind of took a larger chunk, chapter 7, 8, 9, and 10. I want to give you a quick recap if you weren't here, because it is important as we go into 11, I think even to capture what's being said here in 11 based off of where we've been so far. So I'm not going to recap everything, but those chapters from last week, a couple of things. What we see is the children of Israel, they stopped relying on God in the everyday rhythms of life. At least in three ways, we jotted down. Israel stopped relying on God for their everyday, ordinary provisions. You can see that through those chapters. And it's interesting because I think it's a reminder for everyone that slow corruption shows itself through disbelief that God is actually able to provide and satisfy the deepest longings of the heart that are everyday needs in our life. And when that happens, we're going to destroy anything in our path to get what we think we deserve. If we think God's not coming through for us in a way that God should come through for us, if we think that God owes us something, right, and he doesn't deliver in the way that we think that he should deliver, then it is easy to rely on other things, ourselves, other people, our circumstances, for our everyday, ordinary provisions. The other thing that you see here is they stopped seeking God regarding leadership in the kingdom. So their slow fade of corruption shows up in a misplaced trust rooted not in God's leadership, not in God's authority, not in God's power for their lives, but in the deceitful hearts of men who they thought would serve their best interests, right? So they're going to make all these alliances with other kingdoms and with other military powers and whatnot, and they think they're making alliances which will protect them and which will help them, but they'll become enslaved to them. Those places will own them. Which leads into the last one that we saw. Israel stopped trusting God to protect them as a nation. So they rely on their own strength. They build up a military superpower, so they think, and they begin to partner with those surrounding nations. And God says, this is ultimately going to be a part of your downfall, all of these things. And this is at the heart, right? This is at the heart of the spiritual adultery. This is at the heart of the idol worship. This is at the heart of chasing after other things that you think will give you security, significance, worth, and value in life. And those things that you think if you got them, you would have it. What you find out over a period of time is they actually have you. And it is this. It's this corrupted way of thinking. It is this corrupted way of living that is a slow fade in the wrong direction. And the question that we ask ourselves is, how do we guard against that? How do we as a people, recreated in Christ and dwelt and empowered by the Holy Spirit, how do we, in the words of Eugene Peterson, walk the long obedience in the same direction? What does that look like? What does it look like for us to be a people who daily depend upon the Spirit of God, that continue to walk through the doorway of the gospel, to walk in obedience to His word one moment at a time, each and every day? There is something to be said for wanting to continue to grow and finish well as we walk with the Lord. This past week, I had the opportunity to spend a few days with a mentor and a really great friend of mine. His name is Dwight Smith, and we were in Florida together for some meetings, and Dwight's 70 now, and I just listened to Dwight articulate to a young group of pastors his desire to finish well. I just want to finish well. As a 70-year-old man, I look around, and the news is full of people, even leaders in churches, who aren't finishing well. I want to be someone who finishes well. This idea that we make no apologies for around Summit Church, that the ordinary, regular practices and rhythms of life are forming the kinds of people that we become. Whether we live into that and lean into that with intentionality or not, our prayer is that we would lean into that and live in that sort of intentionality. But as God's kids, we have been set apart. We've been called to live these lives of divine distinction that bear witness to His glory, that extend the kingdom. That is the idea that you see originally that God wanted with the children of Israel, that they would live their life in such a way that the other nations could look in and see there is something very different. Yes, He is our God, and we are His children. And what we see today in Hosea 11, I think, is the thing that compels us all these years later. You can fast forward into 2018. What is the thing that compels us to joyfully and willingly and intentionally live these lives of divine distinction? What is it that compels us to live these lives of walking in obedience? And at the heart of that, at the core of that, is an understanding that we must have and continually come back to time and time again of how the God of the universe feels towards us, thinks about us. So read with me, if you would, Hosea 11, verse 1. It says this: when Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son. The more they were called, the more they went away. They kept sacrificing to the Baals and burning offerings to idols. We'll stop right there for just a second, because I think this is a good reminder for us. One of the things I think that resonates so much with us as we work through this book of the Bible is the imagery that's used, right? It's powerful and it's very pointed. So we've already read through Hosea's own personal story about his wife Gomer, this imagery, right? That she, well, it wasn't imagery for them. Like, she was unfaithful. She was committing adultery. And God was using what he was really walking through as this picture of how the children of Israel were treating God, calling them adulterers. And here, as we go into 11, the imagery, it takes on more of a parent dealing with a rebellious child picture. There are these other images and pictures that start to pop up that God is using through, as the prophet Hosea writes, right? It says in verse 3, "Yet it was I who taught Ephraim, Israel, to walk. I took them up by their arms, but they did not know that I healed them." Hey, stop for a second. Here. Can you, and sometimes it's hard, but in this moment, I'd love for you to be able to hear the heartbreak. Can you hear the heartbreak as God tells Hosea to write what Hosea is writing about how the children of Israel have responded and reacted to his love and his care towards them? "I've shown them my love. I called them out of Egypt," right? He saved them. He called them to covenant obedience through the prophets. Which, and this is the reminder, I think, for us. You know, Hosea is just one of the many prophets. Like, what we're reading about and processing through here, like, there is just this repeating cycle with the children of Israel. That they continually turn to false gods. That they continually turn to other loves. It says here, including Baal. In the Hebrew, the literal reading here is this: the more they, the prophets, called them, the more they, the Israelites, went from them. There was this continual, "Hey, come on, come back, turn back to God, turn back to God, turn back to God, turn back to God." You know, for some of you, the fact of the matter is, with what we were reading with Hosea and Gomer early on in this picture that the Lord, that God's been painting with the spiritual adultery of the children of Israel. The fact of the matter is, for a lot of you in this room, you've never walked through adultery. A lot of you in the room have never walked with someone close to you this walk through adultery. And so the fact of the matter is, there may be some of you that that's just kind of been a hard connect for you, honestly, even as we've gone through this series. But one of the, I think, the benefits, even of the imagery beginning to switch up, is that for some of you, when you get into this idea of a child walking away, a child that you love, child that you would do anything for, and that child repeatedly says, "I'm not interested in that." And like, that resonates, doesn't it? Some of you have that child, some of you are that child. And this is how your parents currently feel or have felt. I've got two girls. They're young still in my mind. 13 and 9. The other day, there were some pictures, like the real deal pictures, not like on the phone pictures, like the real deal, like take them to CVS and they're going to print them for you pictures. They were on our dining room table. I don't know where they came from. I guess my wife and daughters had gotten them out. My wife loves pictures. We're very different in that way. She loves the past. I'll come home someday and there's just like bins of pictures, and this is what she's done. Just looked into the past. She's very much that kind of person. So we have bins of pictures in our house. But there were a few pictures sitting out on our dining room table. And they were all of Caroline at age 4. I was like, man, that was fast. You know, when you come and you read a passage like this, and if you read it, I think, as it's intended to be read, you can sense this heartbreak in the God of the universe that his children, whom he loves and has provided for, has brought out of slavery, has shown himself faithful over and over and over and over and over again. Those kids have said no. Not once, not twice, not three times. Over and over and over again. They don't even realize, it says, they don't even realize that I'm the one that taught them how to walk. And with those, figuratively speaking, same legs with which I taught them to walk, they now walk away. I can't. I've tried. Like, I feel like it helps me identify more with what God's going through, right? I try to put myself in the shoes of what it would look like for one of my girls to make that decision. And to know what a parent's love is and how you, right? So this isn't just Hosea needed something to say, so these are the words we got. God is saying, I established you, I sustained you, I have healed you, and you won't even acknowledge me. Jason, do you have those types of conversations with people sometimes? I do. Yeah. I know what God has done for me, people will say. And I know what God expects of me in this moment from an obedience standpoint, they will say. And then they follow that up with, but I'm going to do what I want to do. But then I examine my own life and I go, are there times in Jason Malone's life when maybe he doesn't verbally say it out loud, but by the choices he makes, the decisions he makes in that moment, I know he loves me and cares. I know what walking in obedience looks like in this moment, and I'm still going to choose to do a different thing. Verse 4 says, I led them with cords of kindness, with bands of love, and I became to them as one who eases the yoke on their jaws, and I bent down to them, and I fed them. So now the analogy changes to that of a kind and caring farmer and his animals. And so maybe you haven't gotten the adultery piece, and maybe you haven't even got the wandering child piece, but maybe this is it for you. Yes, animals. Fine. It's not me. Maybe that's totally fine. It's not a less than thing. It's totally fine, right? Yeah, animals. But it is interesting how it's talked about here. Obviously, as Hosea is writing this, this is for people to understand in their context as well. A farmer who will not lead in a rough and uncaring way, but with gentleness and kindness, leads his animals to eat. To eat what? Food. To eat food that who provided? That he provided. Why? Because he cares. God is saying in yet another creative way, I have treated you with compassion, and I have treated you with love. It's not just that he allows you to eat. He's provided even what you're eating, and I'm going to lead you to a place with compassion and kindness and love where you can eat because I love you. Verse 5 says, they shall not return to the land of Egypt, but Assyria shall be their king because they've refused to return to me. The sword shall rage against their cities, consume the bars of their gates, and devour them because of their own counsels. Verse 7 says, my people are bent on turning away from me, and though they call out to the Most High, he shall not raise them up at all. So there is this picture, again, of them refusing to return to God. Verse 5 says, my people are bent on turning away from me. Verse 7 says, they refuse to return to God. Verse 5 says, my people are bent from turning away from me. Verse 7 says, and I alluded to this a few moments ago, but I'll say it again. We've talked about it as we've gone throughout here. Assyria is going to conquer and rule them, going to be their new Pharaoh, so to speak, right? The Lord had brought them out of slavery. He had given them freedom. And now it'll be just like when they were enslaved in Egypt back in the day. And even in the midst of all of that, says this in verse 8, how can I give you up, O Ephraim? How can I hand you over, Israel? How can I make you like Admah? How can I treat you like Zeboam? These are cities near Sodom and Gomorrah that were destroyed for their sin. My heart, look at all of this. My heart recoils within me. My compassion grows warm and tender. I will not execute my burning anger. I will not again destroy Ephraim. For I am God and not a man, the Holy One in your midst. And I will come, and I will not come in wrath. They shall go after the Lord, and he will roar like a lion. And when he roars, his children shall come trembling from the west. They shall come trembling like birds from Egypt and like doves from the land of Assyria. And I'm going to return them to their homes, declares the Lord. Now, this is not just clarification. This isn't God changing his mind about the impending exile and captivity. that they're going to go through at the hand of the Assyrians, they are. That's still to come. I do want to say this because I think it's important even in our cultural context. Compassion doesn't mean that there isn't consequences. Right? So when people make those kinds of statements, or even in my own life, if I look back and I say, I know what the right thing to do, I know what walking in obedience looks like in this moment, but I'm still going to choose not to do that. Well, then there very well could be consequences, right? It doesn't change the Lord's compassion and kindness towards me. In our culture, we think that compassion and kindness from God is what we deem compassion and kindness. We get to write up all the definitions. You know, I'm raising a couple of girls. I've already talked about that. Are there consequences for their choices sometimes? Yeah. Is that in spite of my compassion or because of my compassion? I would say because of my compassion. Because the most uncompassionate thing I could do is let my children do whatever they want to do. And that's important in our culture, which is saying, just love everybody and let everybody do whatever they want to do and let them run down these roads. And who are you to say anything? Well, I would just say, depending on the relational capital that you have with the person, you have a lot to say. Because the most loving and compassionate thing that you could often do is insert yourself into people's lives that are destroying their lives. I mean, Hosea's proclaiming all of this. Here come the consequences, but I don't want you to forget, even in the midst of the consequences, the compassion of God. I even love the imagery that's used here. This imagery that God is a lion and the people of God are likened to weak and fragile birds, right? Because what do we know about the lion? The lion could easily devour the birds. But he doesn't. They come trembling home. Rather than devouring them, he loves them and gives himself to them and reestablishes them and reassures them of his care. Back to that C.S. Lewis guy. He had a good bit to say about lions. Many of you are familiar, obviously, with C.S. Lewis's writings and Aslan. I'll give you a couple, because I think it ties in really great with Hosea 11 here. Wrong will be right when Aslan comes in sight. At the sound of his roar, sorrows will be no more. And when he bares his teeth, winter meets its death. And when he shakes his mane, we shall have spring again. Or maybe this one. I have been wandering to find him, and my happiness is so great that it even weakens me like a wound. And this is the marvel of marvels, that he called me beloved. Me, who am but as a dog. C.S. Lewis. I don't want you to miss what we're reading here today, because I think it has so much to do with what God thinks about us, therefore informs how we think about God. His compassion towards you, towards me, towards the children of Israel, his compassion towards them, warm and tender. His compassion towards you, warm and tender. The prophet Isaiah says something very similar in Isaiah 49 when he's talking about the restoration of Israel, how God feels towards the children of Israel. This is what he says in Isaiah 49. Can a woman forget her nursing child? That she should have no compassion on the son of her womb. Even these may forget, yet I will not forget you. Behold, I have engraved you on the palms of my hands. Each of us has a story of redemption, right? If you're in this room today and you have a relationship with the God of the universe through his son, Jesus Christ, that is a story of redemption that has been, is being, will continue to be written with your life, yes? And it is your story, my story. Any of us that have returned back to God, it is a story of coming back. It is a story of returning. It is a story of coming home. It is a story of releasing the things that overpromised and underdelivered because they were never made to deliver. That's your story, my story. If we've even said yes to Jesus. And what you read here about the children of Israel being unfaithful, yet God being faithful and relentlessly pursuing them, that's also a part of your story and my story. And I don't ever want to not be undone by that. It's not just that he had compassion as a feeling. His compassion, his mercy, his kindness, his care, his concern, his tenderness, his love was and is active. It's not just a feeling. I'm reading and studying over the last few weeks, and I can't help but think of Luke 15 and the story that Jesus would tell of a wayward son and the father who was expectant and looking for his son to return. And this is what it says in Luke 15. The son, talking to himself, says, I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Just treat me as one of your hired servants. And verse 20 says this, and he arose and came to his father, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him because his father was looking for him and felt what? Compassion. And he ran and he embraced him and he kissed him. I don't know what you think God thinks about you, but I so hope and pray that what Scripture actually says he thinks and feels towards you will inform how you feel towards him and will lead you to walk in faithful obedience to everything that he has called you to. Because he loves you, he made you, he created you, he has walked with you, he's taught you to walk. He spiritually taught you to walk, and when we look back and go, I'm going to do my own thing, God help us. God help us if that's our response. Because I'll say it with all the love in my heart as one of your pastors and elders, there's consequences to making that statement and living that way. I've shared it with you before, you know, throughout the Gospels, the word that is most used to describe how Jesus feels towards people is the word compassion. At the heart of God the Father is compassion, which means at the heart of his Son is compassion towards you and me and us. What comes to mind when you think about God, my prayer, is based off of what God actually has to say about how he feels towards you, but not just says, what he has shown you and shown me. We're going to take communion together in just a moment. I'd love to ask you to bow your heads and close your eyes. And just want to read something over you to kind of close my message today before we take communion. I'll have the worship team come on back up to the stage. With your heads bowed and your eyes closed, I want to read something from J.I. Packer. He wrote a book called Knowing God. It's excellent. Pretty well-known theologian, J.I. Packer is. Listen to these words, if you would. What matters supremely, therefore, is not in the last analysis the fact that I know God, but the larger fact which underlies it, the fact that he knows me, that I am graven on the palms of his hands, that I am never out of his mind, that all of my knowledge of him depends on his sustained initiative in knowing me. I know him because he first knew me and he continues to know me. He knows me as a friend, one who loves me, and there is no moment when his eye is off of me or his attention is distracted from me, and no moment, therefore, when his care falters for me. This is momentous knowledge. There is unspeakable comfort. The sort of comfort that energizes, be it said, in knowing that God is constantly taking knowledge of me in love and watching over me for my good. There is tremendous relief in knowing that his love to me is utterly realistic, based at every point on prior knowledge of the worst about me. so that no discovery can now disillusion him about me in the way that I am so often disillusioned about myself and quench his determination to bless me. I don't know what pops into your mind when you think about God. It is very important. And my hope and my prayer is that it would continually be based off of what you and I know to be true about how he feels towards us, as we can read and see and speak to as we have walked with him. It does change everything. We are going to conclude our time by taking communion. If you're here today and have a relationship with God through Jesus, you're welcome to take communion here at Summit. There's a table up front here to my right, your left. The juice and the cracker are double stacked. So you can take two cups out there together. We're just going to ask you to come. We're going to sing two songs together. Over the course of these two songs, we want you to come up and we want you to take the cup. We want you to take it back to your seat. And at any point in time during these two songs, just take communion there in your seat, okay? Before we sing together, I want to read verse 9 again that I read this morning. I will not execute my burning anger. I will not again destroy Israel. For I am God and not a man, the Holy One in your midst, and I will not come in wrath. And he did not. He came and willingly offered his body, his blood, that you and I would not know his wrath. We would know his peace, his care, his love, his tenderness, his grace, his mercy, his compassion. Dear friends, may that lead us to walk in faithful obedience all the days of our life. Father God, thank you so much for your kindness and graciousness towards us. It seems even trite to say in some ways. But it's not. I pray that hearts would be encouraged, that minds would be renewed in what you think and feel towards us. I pray the beauty and the hope of what we find in and through your Son, Jesus Christ, giving his life for us, would be at the center of what we think about when we think about how you think about us. There really is nothing more important than what we think about you, but that has to be informed by what you've already said and shown and continue to show in your love and your care for us. Thank you for your body. Thank you for your blood. Thank you for relationship. We love you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. For more information about Summit Upstate and other available resources, check out our website at summitupstate.org.